Okay, I'd like to welcome everybody out to the second episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. We're excited to have you. We've got a special guest today. It's Caitlin Eskelson from the Utah Tourism Industry Association. Caitlin's got a pretty vast background in tourism and has worked on several campaigns, including the Mighty Five campaign for the state of Utah. And we're excited to chat with her a little bit about her experience and, you know, some of what she's seen in the industry during her career. So, Caitlin, we're excited to have you.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Great. And then, you know, unfortunately, we also have Jordan Barker with us from Relic.
Oh, hello.
Just kidding. Not unfortunately,
oh,
Jordan.
Man,
all right.
Kind of mean.
But Caitlin, today we want to talk a little bit first about your history. We've got a few questions that we just ask everybody that we have on the podcast, and kind of start there. I'd like to hear a little bit about you, what you're doing now for the Utah Tourism Industry Association, and your background. Just give the listeners who they're listening to here.
Yeah, of course. So I am currently the executive director of the Utah Tourism Industry Association, and we are really the marketing, or not the marketing, but more of the educational and the legislative arm of the tourism industry here in the state of Utah. So we have various partners across the state that we work with very closely to make sure that we provide continuing education as they are trying to keep up with all of the trends. And then, of course, you know, we spend a significant amount of time on our legislative efforts, just trying to maintain, you know, that whole perspective that tourism is really good for the state, the economic driver of it all, and making sure that we kind of continue on this upward trajectory of increasing our marketing dollars and getting people from out of state into state. So that is kind of what we do on the day to day. So my background really stems from not even knowing that I was going to be in the tourism industry, to be honest. I got a Bachelor of Science and, you know, in business and marketing, and had already always had a lot of interest in marketing, but really never knew that tourism was a thing. And I really didn't know that until I moved out to Utah to really be a ski bum, which was my goal. But it turned into much more than that. So I came out here and started working for various DMOs and kind of worked through that process, and was very much on the international side and the domestic side. And then ended up at the Office of Tourism, where I did all of their international marketing, as well as some of their rural marketing, which, you know, is kind of a shift there. And then just a couple of years ago, landed at the Tourism Industry Association. So it's been quite a ride.
Great, great. And I guess before we get too down to business, another question we ask everybody is, what is your dream destination? Where, if you could go anywhere in the world, Caitlin, where would it be?
You know, it's really funny because I find myself vacationing in Utah. You know, if I have weekends to get away, there's so much to explore here. But I think probably my dream destination when my kids are a little bit older is to hop in our RV and try to hit all of the national parks across the country. That's kind of a bucket list for us. We're a really active family and we just love road trips. So that is what we would do.
How long would that trip take, Caitlin?
Oh my gosh. You know, I just read an article on Google, and there was sort of this mock, you know, how do you hit every 48 states? You know, and it said that just the drive time alone would take about 3 weeks if you wanted to hit them all. So, you know, I'm thinking a summer sabbatical sounds really great.
Man, that would be incredible. Yeah, that sounds like a blast. I think I would definitely need my kids to be a little older to take an entire summer, right, and do that.
But yeah, man, for sure. And I have 2-year-old twins, and they're just way too much of a handful right now to even think about anything longer than, you know, 4 to 5 days.
Man, yeah, that sounds a little crazy with 2-year-old twins, especially twins. I'm a twin, and I know the pain that caused my mom. I can't imagine her being in an RV with me and my brother going across the country.
Brutal, brutal.
Yes.
Well, maybe let's dive into the topic a little bit. Jordan, I know we want to talk about really mistakes that marketers make, especially tourism marketers, and how they can avoid those. Jordan, what's something that you see that mistakes that people make, and maybe Caitlin can comment from there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, obviously we worked with a number of destinations, and so it really depends on, you know, the destination that we're talking about. But some of the common things that we see, I feel like one mistake in particular is they try to do too much all at the same time. And no matter what your destination marketing budget is, it's finite, and there's only a certain number of resources regardless. Even if that budget's $1 million or $100,000 or even less, there's only so many hours in the day, and there's only so many things that you can do with that budget, right? And so I think a lot of times everyone goes to these conferences, they hear all these great things, all these great ideas of things that they want to do. And, you know, rightfully so, they're super passionate about their destination, and they want everyone in the world to know about it. And so what they do is they end up just kind of peanut buttering, if you will, their budget, right? And so what they do is they spend a little bit here and a little bit there. And oftentimes what we see is that without that focus, it's really difficult to get the effect and the impact and that ROI that you're really looking for. So I think one mistake that's pretty common is they know that they want to be doing a lot of different marketing tactics. And, you know, instead, I think what ends up being more impactful is to get a channel that where you see some traction, get that really dialed in, and then expand to the next one and the next one. And it's never this, you started it and it's done and you can then, you know, rest. You're always in this kind of continuous optimization and improvement process. But I think that's one thing that we definitely see that's pretty common is that.
So focus maybe.
Yeah.
What do you think, Caitlin? Have you seen that?
Yeah. I mean, I've actually been doing a lot of thinking about this lately because, and I'm sure this is something that we see across the country and even globally, but tourism marketers are really expected to wear so many hats. And a lot of times they're pretty small offices. And so it's kind of like, how do you be that expert on everything, you know? And so I think that, you know, that is a really hard thing. I think the other kind of key to that or another point to that is that a lot of time, and we see this in Utah at least, that counties are marketing by county, you know, because that is how the money flows and the money that's coming into a particular county is expected to be spent on county messaging. And I think that, you know, while there's a big responsibility there to promote your county, we also have to remember that visitors don't travel that way. And they're not just going to stay in one particular county during their travels. So I think while there is a responsibility to promote your very specific destination, I think there's also some benefit in creating, you know, some regional partnerships and, you know, some collaborative, you know, and also I think that way the money would go a little farther, but creating packaging and messaging around a region, you know, might be another thing that we could as an industry do a little better at. Because I know that we're talking about where the money flows, but again, visitors just don't travel that way.
So let me get this straight. You're saying that people don't plan their trips around the county lines that are within the state? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So at least in Utah here, and I think it is similar across the country, all their funding comes back to a very specific geographic area. And while I think we all understand that, I think that it does have benefit to partner with regional areas because at the end of the day, visitors don't know county lines. They don't know state lines. You know, one time I was talking to someone overseas as I was traveling for the Office of Tourism, and I said, "Have you been to Utah?" And they were like, "Oh, no." And then they saw a picture of Delicate Arch in Moab, and they were like, "But I've been there." And I said, "Okay, well, yeah, then you've been in Utah." You know, so a lot of times these visitors are traveling for the experience, but they're not really, sometimes they don't even know exactly where they are in relation to the physical geographic barriers.
Totally, totally. And it's actually a hard paradigm shift to have happen mentally to when we're so organized right into those geographical areas. Tell me a little bit, Caitlin, when you were at the state of Utah, tell me a little bit about some of the challenges, and maybe if you're willing to share even a mistake that maybe you made that you learned from and that maybe our listeners can learn from as well.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, I have some really embarrassing stories that I really don't want to share on this podcast because, you know, I will share one little, you know, so one of the major, and this kind of goes back to, you know, we're all going too fast and we're wearing too many hats, but, and I won't get down to specifics, but one time I put an ad in a very prominent magazine on an airline and had actually approved it. And so it was my fault, but I had switched images. So it said a certain national park, and that wasn't the image that it was showing. So that's one of my most embarrassing stories of my career. Oh, wow. And it was just one of those. But again, it goes back to, you know, we're all wearing so many hats and moving so quickly and trying to get so much done and be everything to everyone that, you know, I guess at the end of the day, you can't be perfect. We did make it right. So I'll go on record for saying that. But I think that one of the things that, and again, because we're all so busy in trying to get the visitor into the state, is we really forget to circle back on the guest experience. And I think that's hard because in destination marketing, we're not necessarily the booking channel and we don't necessarily own the client. So, you know, because we're not like an airline or a hotel that, you know, the booking happens and we then own that client and we can retarget them and, you know, all of that. So I think that something we could have done better and can still do better to this day is circling back on the customer experience and making sure that we're targeting them in meaningful ways and encouraging them to come back and visit. And I don't know, you know, it's a hard one. I don't know if that's done via, you know, an online sign up at checkout. I'm not exactly sure how that all happens, but I'm a firm believer in delivering on the brand promise. And I think that going above and beyond as an entire state, as an entire destination, to make it a really special, engaging, meaningful experience is really important.
That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I think I want to double click on that, you know, making good on that brand promise, because we hear a lot about that, right? So how do we make sure, and I guess maybe there's a question for you, Adam, I know we work with several destinations. How do we make sure that that brand promise, and to Caitlin's point, you know, that that expectation of that visitor is met? How do we make sure that that's aligned?
Yeah, I think it requires a little bit of vulnerability, right? And maybe some honesty about who we are as a destination, right? I think, you know, each of us, and Utah is a unique market too, because I swear every county in Utah has incredible, incredible places to visit, things to do, right? But I think we all know what we may not be the best at, or what may not have the best customer experience with. And it requires, I think, being a little bit honest about what we are and what we are not, right? But if we try to market what we want to be and will never be, right, the customer comes and has a poor experience. So I don't know, it's hard to admit, right? But there's some things that we may not be the best resource for in our neck of Utah. If we're speaking specifically for Utah DMOs.
That makes a lot of sense. And I guess, Caitlin, question for you, you know, we talk about mistakes, and I think it's easy for us to compare our marketing efforts or what we're trying to do to other destinations, right? And it's easy from an outsider looking in, you often feel like, man, those guys have just got it figured out and they're so buttoned up and their messaging and their creative looks really spot on. But, you know, what we don't see is what happens behind the scenes and some of those mistakes that are made, to your point, right? So I guess question for you would be, you know, why is that a good thing? What can we learn from mistakes? And, you know, why is it okay in your eyes for us to make mistakes in marketing? And what can we learn and what should we learn from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that making mistakes is just all a part of the game, especially in marketing where we're dealing with a lot of creative energy. And I also think that, you know, the travel and tourism industry and destination marketing is moving so quickly. We're bound to make mistakes, right? I mean, a lot of what we do is trial and error. And I think that, again, going back to that guest experience and having a little bit of humility, you know, it's sometimes just saying, oh, sorry, we tried our best on that one. It didn't work, but we've learned from it and can move forward. I think that's really, you know, what people are looking for and what marketing campaigns should be all about, you know, is being authentic, but admitting to when you make a mistake. And, you know, maybe from the marketing side, if you've spent a huge amount of dollars on a project and it just didn't pan out the way you want, well, then you pivot and you head in a different direction. And I think that's just a lot of what marketing is all about, is sort of that trial and error. And when you find something where you're getting, you know, really good analytics back from it and it's really working, then hold on to that and build from it.
I think you're exactly right, Caitlin. You know, the mistakes are how we learn, right? And I think every marketing department, every destination will make those kinds of mistakes. And having the humility to learn from it, that's a big part of making sure that we're doing great marketing. I want to hear when you were at the state of Utah, we talked about mistakes, right? I don't want this to be like a confessional of all the mistakes you've ever made. But a lot of people think, oh man, if I had the state of Utah's marketing budget, I could do anything, right? And it would be so easy. But I know that at the state level, you guys deal with just as many challenges. It's like the more money you have to spend, suddenly you have to tackle international a lot better. And you've got a lot more markets that you can tackle, but that also creates a lot more variables in what could go wrong. So what were the challenges that you guys encountered that you really had to focus on overcoming when you were at the state tourism office? And that could be from, you know, a creative standpoint or even to a volume of work or you know, the full gamut. What did you see?
There are so many things that sort of come to mind in terms of unique challenges that state offices of tourism really do face. You know, one is sort of just being everything to all people. From the international side specifically, I guess I'll first speak to that. You know, international is a really hard game to play, especially for everyone. So a challenge that I faced was we had some destinations that had been in international marketing for 30 years, and we had others that were just entering. And so you have this huge gap between resources, knowledge, you know, us training tour operators overseas, all of it. You know, and so it was really difficult. And I think the best way that we were able to kind of pivot and respond to that was by creating some co-op programs that could be bought into on really small incremental levels that would help destinations buy under the Utah Life Elevated brand. And I think that was something that was sort of a game changer for these smaller destinations with smaller budgets that wanted to play the game, but they just didn't quite know where to start. And I think that, you know, when tour operators, you know, or people overseas are looking for destinations, you know, they're making, first they know they want to come to the United States. Then they might know they want to come to Utah, but they're not really sure. And so to get them on that granular level of saying, I want to come to this specific national park, that takes quite a bit of messaging. And so I think for us, creating this kind of tiered prepackaged co-op program was one of the best benefits that we were able to offer to our, you know, to our DMOs and our local entities. I think the other challenge that we faced and we're facing now is that we had a really successful, extremely successful marketing campaign around the Mighty Five, which is the Mighty Five National Parks. And we sold that campaign and we packaged it and, you know, and people loved the heck out of it. So now we're kind of trying to pivot off of what is the 2.0 version of a campaign that you may never get one that's better. You know, and so how do you pivot off of that and kind of come up with the next 2.0 version? And, you know, we've been working on that. And, you know, even though now I'm not at the Office of Tourism, I'm still closely involved. And we're struggling to figure out how do we push people outside of those anchor tenants into other areas of the state. And then the issue with that is how do those other areas of the state package themselves to really be marketable. So it's sort of this just downward funnel of how do you manage that visitor? And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that faces the state offices probably across the country today.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think obviously to your point with the campaign being so successful, that's a common theme that we hear. I think when we talk to destinations is, okay, how do we A, either replicate that success, or B, you know, we might be a rural market. And so how do we make sure that we can leverage that and take advantage of that in the correct way? You know, going back to maybe even from an advice standpoint, as you talk to tourism or marketers, what advice, especially if I'm a new tourism marketer, what advice would you give me? I know there's, again, we talked about the fact that there are so many things to tackle. How should I think about that? Like, what advice would you have for me as a new tourism marketer? Let's pretend that I'm a new tourism marketer. What would you tell me, and where should I start?
Such a good question. Because again, as you're entering your, you know, a lot of these folks are wearing so many hats. So, you know, I would say first and foremost, get a little just of traditional tourism education under your belt. So attend some of these local conferences that are kind of addressing all the things, and just let it absorb for a minute. You know, I think once you figure out who you are and what and play to your role as a marketer in the best way that you know how, you'll start to identify, you know, what are you good at and what do you need to seek other help from? But I think that overall, when you're delving into the marketing, I think it's really critical to keep in the back of your mind to be authentic, to be yourself, to be creative, because it is a creative industry. It is a passionate industry. And I think that we all need to be putting as many ideas out into the marketplace and then just kind of testing them and seeing what sticks. So, you know, go in, especially if you're brand new to the industry, because tourism does have, you know, differences from other. We're not selling widgets. We're selling an experience or an idea. So come into the industry and get a little bit of education under your belt. Find some really good mentors that can tell you right off the bat what does not work, or what they've tried and has failed. And then start figuring out, you know, authentically, what are you good at and what is your destination good at, and trying to match those together into creating a plan.
Totally. That makes sense. I Jordan brought up, you know, people who are kind of entering the tourism industry or maybe early in their process. One mistake that I've seen out there is I've seen a lot of people fall into the mistake of saying, well, if I was the one booking a trip, I would do this, right? So it's almost like they're building a marketing plan based on their decision-making process. Why would you say that might not be the best idea?
Well, I think that travel and tourism is so individualized. And so your idea of travel is not going to be everyone's idea of travel. I think instead of looking at what you personally would want or how you personally would want to book a trip, I think you need to break it down into various demographics. So look at it from the family, the couple, the multi-generational travelers, you know, and kind of break it down into subsets, and then look at it from what would they potentially be interested in. And I think the best way to do that is to ask them. You know, there's so many mechanisms now of getting feedback from potential customers, and, you know, whether it's surveying them or being really involved on social, or, you know, a lot of those things, they may take time, but they don't take a lot of money, if any. And I think the more info you can gather on customers' perspectives, they're going to feel like they're really heard. And again, I think it kind of loops back into that customer experience and making sure that you're really identifying what they want.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. One thing you mentioned that I really liked, you talk about, you know, I think it's really easy for us to kind of do what we'd like to refer to as marketing by committee, right? So you've got a number of people that have opinions about the destination. They have different ideas of how they want to approach the marketing, and, you know, what's important to them might not be important to the visitor, to your point. And so I think really looking at the data, that's one thing that we've seen, I think a lot of solid results that we've been able to tweak and optimize campaigns as a result of. So whether that's a survey, whether that's looking at things like demographic data within Google Analytics, I mean, there's so many tools that we have at our fingertips today to be able to extract that data. And so I think to your point, Caitlin, I think gone are the days of you know, marketing by gut, right? Going with what we think is the right answer. And I think to your point, Adam, you know, making sure that we're not trying to market to ourselves, it's real easy to look at the data and to be able to say, okay, what makes sense and how should we be approaching this? Because, you know, it's really hard to argue with numbers. It's really hard to argue with facts, right? And so I think if we can incorporate data, what's really happening at the visitor level, and then how do we take that information, incorporate that into our marketing message, I think is really impactful.
Well, and as a tourism marketer, there's a lot of noise, right? I mean, you've got a lot of stakeholders that want to have a say in what you're doing, you know, especially if you're a county destination, the hotels or the restaurants or the other, or even the citizens want to know, how's that money being spent? Well, I think it should be, I have been in some board meetings, some destination board meetings, and the opinions and suggestions that have been thrown out by people who obviously are not marketers, but have very strong opinions about what they believe works. And I'm not gonna say what they suggested, but let's just say there were some surprises in there.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that, Caitlin, when there's so many voices out there, so much noise, so many people saying what you should do? As a destination marketer, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, so to that point, I think that's when you hire a really good media buyer or an ad agency to sort of be your third party spokesperson, to be honest. Dealing with local politics is tremendously difficult, because even when you have a board and you ask them to take off their personal hat, if you will, it's hard. Because they're at some level, maybe they're a hotel owner or they're a guide and outfitter, but they are personally benefiting from the decisions that are being made about the marketing campaign. So I think that, you know, one of the points, you know, one of the first things that I would do is in dealing with the politics is making sure that you have a third party at the table, whether that is a facilitator. And I think personally, I have facilitated these discussions for entities. I've also hired facilitators, and I think they are well worth their weight in gold, because they can keep a conversation off track and they can say the really hard things that are potentially going to offend, you know, someone, but they're not offensive because it's coming from a third party agency that's just looking from the, you know, 30,000 foot view. I think the other thing is that this is why it's so critical to hire, you know, an agency in some regard, because the agency can also act as that third party professional and come in and say, you know, hey, we have run the numbers, and, you know, and we feel like this is going to give you your best ROI, your best bang for the buck, but you're, you know, as an agency, they're the professional and they're the expert. And I think it's a little bit harder to argue against what they're trying to tell you to do.
You know, it shouldn't be that way, but sometimes people trust that third party, just because it's two voices saying it instead of one. But That's not where I expected you to go. I don't hate where you went, for sure, as an agency owner. But I think regardless of whether it's an agency or you're bringing in someone in-house that buys that media, I think you're absolutely right. Having that outside looking in perspective probably gives a little bit of confidence, I guess, for the people involved.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think the other nice thing too is, you know, because there's so many people that have different opinions and they want to weigh in, going back to either having a third party that can help facilitate this or even using the technology yourself. But, you know, it used to be that the person with the most seniority, or, you know, a lot of times you refer to the highest paid person in the room, they were the ultimate decision maker. So if their idea was presented in the room, then that's typically what happened, right? Everyone kind of had no other option but to fall in line and to execute on that plan or that idea. Now, you know, if you've got a third party that can help you facilitate this, or again, there's a lot of technology that helps you to do this. But going back to the data conversation, it's really nice, because if you do have multiple people with different ideas, well, let's test the ideas, right? Like, let's run a test. So if someone has an idea on the homepage, they feel like it should be this design, or the button should be this color, well, that's great. Why don't we actually test both of those options? Let's run those tests for a specified period of time. And then let's take a look back at the data and let the data do the talking, right? So I think it does. I think the combination of either having a third party that can speak to that and to be able to have hard conversations and say things that might not be particularly popular with the board or whoever's involved, right? But I think the nice thing about that is, again, if you can have the data to support that, it's a nice way of being able to incorporate various ideas, test those, report back on the data and say, this is what's resonating with the visitor and this is what the visitor thinks. I mean, it's really at the end of the day, that's where the focus is, right? Like, let's make sure that they're having that experience that they that we promised that they would have and ensure that that's happening.
And maybe that's another topic for another show entirely, because how do you take all this data that you have, which all destinations have got a lot of data,
right?
How do you package it and organize it in such a way that it's compelling enough for you to be able to push your plan through the stakeholders that might have something to say?
Exactly right. Yep, exactly right.
Well, Caitlin, I think we'll wind down here. We don't want to take, I know you've got a lot going on and we don't want to take too much of your time, but one more question. And actually, I think maybe we'll ask you two more questions. Sorry, I lied. The first one is, what do you think is the most important thing for a tourism marketer to do? What is the most important component of tourism marketing?
Gosh, I think the most important component to tourism marketing is probably, you know, the guest experience, you know, and circling back to really understanding who your client is and not speaking to everyone in the same voice, you know, giving voice to the visitors and targeting them and creating sequential, you know, communications with them that are meaningful, that are going to not only encourage them to book a trip today, but encourage them then to relive their experience by telling their friends, you know, and then serving up additional options for stay 2 through 5, you know. And I think that is something that we can all do better at, because it's not necessarily the easiest thing. It's much easier to just put an ad in a publication, but I think it's really critical and a huge opportunity for our industry. And I think one of the ways we can kind of learn more about that is look at some private sector businesses that are non-tourism that do things really well. Whether it's car companies or, you know, General Mills or whatever it is, but learning more tactics and how to engage the visitors. And I'm not talking, just about the front end. I'm really talking about how do we make it that cyclical cycle and encourage them to become our champions.
I really like that. I think that's an area that sometimes gets overlooked. I think the focus is really, how do we get someone there to our destination? But how do we keep them coming back, right? And I think a lot of that goes back to keeping true to that brand promise, so that if your marketing message, it matches what the experience is once the visitor actually gets there. I think that's key, right? I mean, I think that if you show me, and I think we talked a little bit about this on the last episode, but if you show me an ad and it's, you know, your destination and there's nobody there, and when I get there, it's just this overcrowded mess, like that's probably not going to really resonate with me, right? So I think that goes back to the brand promise that we've talked about. But I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of companies that do this really, really well, where they get repeat visitors. And I mean, that's the most cost-effective way to market, right? You've already spent the marketing dollars to get them to do whatever the intended action was. In tourism, it's to get them to visit. And so how do we get them to tell their friends and their families and turn them into true brand ambassadors? And, you know, I think we could look at a lot of companies that do that really, really well. So, you know, say what you will about Amazon, but they do this really, really well, right? They'll give you a product, you purchase it, and then they'll give you recommendations, right? So imagine if you could apply that same logic to the tourism industry. If you said, hey, you came and visited this one particular spot, what did you even know that we also have these 5, 6, 7 other activities that for people like you would also make sense, right? Based off of some of your activities that you guys have expressed interest in. So I think there's a huge opportunity there for us to be able to say, obviously there's kind of that anchor that pulls people into your destination and says, this is why you should come and visit us. But also the next time you come and visit, make sure you come check out, you know, our rafting experience, or make sure you come and check out all of the amazing trails that we have. Whatever it is, our destination has more to offer than just this one thing. So bring your family, tell your friends, and also give them a reason to do that, right? I mean, obviously, best case scenario is they organically had such a great experience that they want to tell their friends, they want to tell their families, they're excited. But, you know, it doesn't hurt to kind of give them a reason to do that and help facilitate that. That could be, hey, share this link with a friend or whatever. It could be some sort of a competition or a contest, rather. I think there's a number of ways you can do that. But obviously, best case scenario is organically, they have loved it, they want to come back, they want to tell their friends about it. But I do think as marketers, there's things we can do to help facilitate that process to make it a little bit easier for them to do so.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways, it kind of goes back to that old school concept of loyalty programs, you know? I mean, you see companies still using loyalty programs today. A lot of times, you know, Marriott or Hilton, and they've got their reward points. And not that we would issue reward points for coming on a vacation, but how do we serve them up something really special as a thank you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's a great idea. And it kind of leads into my final question. You know, you talk about how the post-visit experience, I don't think we invest very much in that right now. And I think that's a huge opportunity. So I'm glad you went there. And maybe if we have you on another time, we'll go a little deeper on that, because that could be a whole topic in and of itself. I think the final question that I have for you today, and Caitlin, it's really been great to have you on. I appreciate your insight. We've been educated. We like to ask everyone at the end of the episode, what do you think is coming for the tourism industry, especially like future technology or future ability, specifically from a marketing standpoint? What do you think we have to look forward to and tools that maybe we can use or you know, lots of different options, but what could that be? What do you see that as?
Well, I think that, you know, again, the industry is moving so quickly, and I think what we're going to see is a more holistic approach to destination marketing. There's really, you know, a lot of buzzwords right now in the industry around over-tourism and placemaking, you know, is a big one that people like to throw out. And I think that, you know, as marketers, we're gonna see ourselves having a larger role in the entire experience. And I think it's gonna not just be on the back end customer service or guest experience. I think it's gonna literally be a responsibility for destination marketing organizations to really pivot to becoming destination management organizations. And I think the marketing role in all of that is servicing the guest at every step of their trip, and really packaging the experience in a unique way. And I think that as a management organization, it's going to go well beyond that as well. I think we're going to see ourselves delving into what are the needs of a community and how do we help build them out and how do we merge the quality of life with the visitor experience, you know, all of that. But I think from a marketing perspective, it's really going to become, you know, not just following up on the back end, but how do we facilitate their experience, serve them up options, you know, as they're here on the ground. So one example of that might be, you know, implementing a technology system at the national parks or an app where they can log in and they can see that a wait time to hike to a certain monument is 2 hours, but, oh, hey, here's another suggestion of a state park that you can go to that really would be a national park. You know, it's national park quality and you're going to have this awesome experience. And, oh, by the way, there's no wait time at all. And so I think it's going to get into this real time marketing and I think it's going to become more of a conversation, an ongoing conversation that happens in real time that, you know, services guests on the ground and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. A brand connection throughout the experience. I think that's a great thing, and I'm excited to see it come to pass. And I'm sure we'll be able to work together on that at some point. So Caitlin, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate having you on. Anything else you want to say before we go, or any last words there?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been really great being able to share some of my ideas. And I think that we're so fortunate, you know, to live here in Utah, but also be able to be in an industry that's just so passionate. And I think one of the greatest things about the industry and destination marketing is that we all get to be super creative and we just get to, you know, play it out and see what sticks and see, you know, what the guest responds to. And if we need to, we can make changes. And it's just, it's really a journey. It's really a journey and it's really fun to work in this industry.
Great. Great. Well, thanks everyone for listening and we will talk to you soon. This is the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm Adam Stoker. I'm here with my co-host Jordan Barker, and thanks to Caitlin Eskelson for joining us today.